Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, where we talk all about Lyme and beyond, because as most of us know, Lyme doesn't travel alone. I created this podcast to offer you hope and, most importantly, to remind you that healing is possible because I healed from my own personal journey. Although it was exhausting physically, emotionally, financially, it truly was a blessing as it reshaped my mind, body, and soul. In this space, we share raw and real conversations with those who have made it to the other side of this journey, along with breaking down different topics with practitioners and approaches. My goal is to help you feel less alone, more empowered, and confident in being your own advocate. So, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you're looking for more tips and resources, I share everything I learned along my journey on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page. So let's get into today's guest. So I'm so excited about this episode because a few weeks ago, I reached out on social media and I got flooded with questions. So my question was, do people know the relation between oral health and our overall health? And I think that many people don't. And within this Lyme community, oftentimes something going on in the mouth could truly be inhibiting you from healing. And so I'm excited to have with me today a biological dentist, and we're just gonna break it all down. So I'm super excited to welcome Dr. Alex Volchnik, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. And moving forward, hopefully he doesn't mind, I'm gonna roll with Dr. Alex because it rolls off the tongue so much easier. So, Dr. Alex, it's so nice to meet you. And truly, I am so honored to have you join me today. And I'm excited to hear what you're gonna teach me and my listeners because the connection between the oral health, right? Like in our overall body, I don't need to tell you, right? So,
Right, that's
welcome
right.
to the show.
Thank you so much, Tanya. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and so happy to be able to share this very, very, very important and often overlooked message with your listeners. And I hope that this is a resource that empowers people with more information about what oral health can do for you and what optimizing healing with a healthy mouth can look like. And so this is a wonderful opportunity. I look forward to our conversation and sharing the important aspects of biologic dentistry with everyone here.
I love it. So I'm super excited because I'm always wanting to learn new things, right? And I didn't go to dental school, so I don't know much about that other than kind of the basics of what everybody knows, right? So let's just start with what is a dentist versus a biological dentist, right? Let's start at the baseline there. What's kind of the difference between?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, there's no schooling specifically for biologic dentistry, at least yet. And hopefully there will be. And I'll say my true hope is that all dentistry will be biologic dentistry in the future. But what happens is when you go through education after college, you go on to dental school. And dental school will teach you a lot of conventional, what we'll call conventional thought processes, techniques, and give a baseline understanding of how the body works and how treatments are rendered. And you'll also get experience and opportunity to treat patients utilizing these approaches. In certain cases, you could go on and specialize further. That's what I've done. So my specialization is in periodontics. That involves the health of the gum, the bone, all the foundational structures of the teeth. But there are other specialties as well, ranging from orthodontics to prosthodontics to TMJ specialty. And the concept of biologic dentistry is really like an overarching philosophy that we feel that the mouth is part of the whole with the body, and that treating the mouth can help improve systemic health issues. And also, systemic health issues have ramifications on the mouth as well. And biologic dentistry is really about connecting that link. It's about getting to the root causes of problems, whether they originate in the mouth or in the body, not just putting a Band-Aid or or producing a treatment that's going to last for 5 or 10 years, but really try to go for lasting health and longevity. And lastly, it's an important focus on the materials, techniques, and processes that are used on the body. So we want to make sure that what materials we use are non-toxic and biocompatible, because this is something that we are putting into the body for decades, if not for a lifetime at a time. And we need to understand that the body is not an inert system. It's not like hanging a picture on the wall and it'll be the same wall and the same nail and the same picture this whole time, but it's going to be a dynamic system, an evolving system, an ecosystem between the body, the immune system, the microbiome, and respecting that balance. And that's what biologic dentistry is about. And that's why I say that, every dentist could be a biologic dentist if they accept that concept, right? And in accepting that concept, they really can start to open the ways that they practice to really be more in line with the body as a whole. And very importantly, almost be an extension of what functional medicine or medicine should be as well.
I love that. And very well explained. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, okay. So of course, I had mentioned, I do have a list of questions from the listeners and I'm going to be throwing my questions in too. So, and I already have one. Okay. So this may sound kind of like it's a asking the same thing, but I'm pretty sure you'll understand it differently as well. So we can have a mouth issue, right? Like causing a body issue. Is
Right.
it reverse as well? Can we have a
Yeah.
body issue that could cause a mouth issue?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of corollaries, a lot of two-way streets with this. In fact, I'll even kind of go into periodontics as a wonderful example of that in the
Okay.
field of gum health. So, we have what we've kind of found over the years is that there's a very strong correlation between the oral microbiome and systemic health issues such as diabetes or cardiovascular disease. And in fact, this even extends to more novel things like Alzheimer's and low birth weight babies and higher risk for preeclampsia in pregnant women. COVID issues. There's really a lot of them, but I'm going to go to some of the very classic things, things that we've known for about 40 years, almost close to 50 years, is the association between oral bacteria and cardiovascular disease and diabetes, two of the most common associated chronic health conditions in the United States. And what we've kind of found is not only do oral health issues amplify the disease process in those patients, but we found kind of the corollary as well, and to your question, that patients who have cardiovascular disease are more predisposed to inflammation in the mouth. We'll see a greater risk for bleeding gums. We see a greater risk for periodontal disease. And the same thing with diabetes. Patients with diabetes, it's a systemic inflammatory disease. So it's not just the pancreas that's affected. It's not just the gut or the body as a whole that's affected, but we'll also see this weakened immune system in the mouth as well. And because patients often see their dentists a lot more than they see their physicians, there's actually this, I'll even call it a responsibility on the dentist side to be able to pick up these things earlier. And we find that all the time. We will tell a patient, look, I see a very high level of inflammation in your mouth. Have you gotten blood work? Have you checked in with the doctor to take a look at this? And sometimes we will find elevated labs, like elevated blood sugar, and we are catching diabetes. We're catching hyperglycemia. We're catching elevated A1C scores for our patients. And I think that this is such an important opportunity to see that. So they are connected. The mouth is a window to the body. If we see disease in the body, we'll see it in the mouth, right? And that's one of the telltale signs that we can look at this and we can see it. Other GI health issues, for example, Crohn's disease will sometimes manifest with certain plaques on the soft tissues in the mouth. Vitamin deficiencies can have changes in the tongue. So the mouth is a very, very interesting place. And to the attuned doctor, whether it's a physician or a dentist that looks at it, it's really a whole sea of clues as to what's going on with that patient. It's a lot more than just teeth and gums in there.
Wow. It's fascinating to hear it, right? Like, I mean, God created such an amazing being in our body, and it truly is connected from head to toe. But oftentimes we just don't make that connection, the mouth. And then for you to be able to, be somewhat of a practitioner besides just a dentist, right? Like, hey, something is going on, something is causing this. It's incredible. And for whatever reason, that just made me pop into my head that I remember when I was going through my own personal Lyme journey, which was very brutal. But on any given random day, every tooth in my mouth felt like it had a cavity. And it was the craziest feeling. I was positive they were going to have to pull all my teeth. And, I was so sick, I was in bed. I'm sure there were many dentist appointments that I missed, not by choice, right? But by physical capability of getting there. But it's interesting now talking about this whole correlation between the two. So obviously, my body was telling my mouth something, like I knew something was wrong. Maybe I didn't know what it was, but that is fascinating because it truly, when I am not exaggerating when I said it feels like the worst cavity I've ever had on every single tooth in my mouth.
Well, for a significant subset of patients, one of the manifestations of Lyme disease is neuronal involvement. So that could be like neuropathy or neuralgia, or nerve pain. Our teeth are wired with nerve endings that sense everything as pain, for better or worse. So if you eat cold ice cream, right, you get that pain in the tooth, right? That
Right.
brain freeze effect, that's a pain signal, right? A cracked tooth, pain, right? That's a cavity going to the nerve, pain. And so that pathway, right? If Lyme pathogens start activating the nerve pathways of the jaw that innervate the teeth, that is a very real manifestation that can happen, and very, very important to diagnose it properly. That make sure that it's not actually the teeth that are the problem, but it's actually the Lyme and getting that treated. And so it's important to see a Lyme literate dentist that knows that, because I've seen a lot of patients who feel pain in teeth, and dentists will say, "Oh, you need a root canal," and they'll do a root canal, and the patient still feels it, right? And they say, "Oh, okay, no, it's the tooth next door." And now they do that. And unfortunately, that happens in neuronal pain patients. And very, very important to kind of test that one step further and prevent that.
Wow. So it almost sounds like maybe I shouldn't have missed those dentist appointments. Maybe I could have got a Lyme diagnosis sooner.
I think so. I think so. In seeing the right type of doctors and seeing the right type of people, that's really kind of a big, a big deal. Unfortunately, there's not as much literacy or awareness in the dental community to Lyme disease, and it's one of my missions to really try to change that and create a much bigger understanding into the roles that I believe every patient who it comes down with a Lyme diagnosis or is suspecting that they may have Lyme disease, get a screening with a biologic dentist, and a biologic dentist that's aware of Lyme, right? Because Lyme can manifest in a lot of different pathologies, and working closely with practitioners that are helping those patients go through that journey and treat that condition, you're not going to be successful without having the dental involvement and checking the mouth for these infections, these disease processes.
Okay, so with that said, so we can, if we're looking for a practitioner in general, a lot of times we're looking for, an integrative doctor or a naturopath, but that doesn't mean they know about Lyme, right? So we need to make sure that they are specific with Lyme when it comes to that. So what I'm hearing you say is that it goes the same for a biological dentist. When we're seeking them out, we need to make sure, if we suspect Lyme, right, that we're going to somebody that is familiar with Lyme.
Correct. And that's definitely kind of one of the shortcomings in the field. We were chatting a little bit, prior to starting the recording, that there's just not enough awareness to this, even within the dental community itself. So not every biologic dentist, who I would say is steps ahead of conventional dentists in their understanding of oral systemic health issues, is aware of the manifestations of Lyme disease on the mouth. and the very unique role that they can play in helping patients with these conditions with proper diagnosis. But there is a few things that are important to look for and a few important questions that could be asked. One, first and foremost, is screening that the doctor or the dentist does have some type of biologic dental training, which fortunately now there is that this does exist. This process is starting. There are groups like the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, the IAOMT, or the International Academy of Biologic Medicine and Dentistry, the IABDM, are two groups that are kind of channeling to educate doctors and create some structure around what biologic dentistry should be. And there's always mention of Lyme disease in that. And then there's also education in the proper training and treatment of certain conditions that Lyme disease may manifest with. And I think that that's probably a deeper dive conversation as we kind of go into this, and we'll talk more about it. But some of the treatments require doctors who are trained in that treatment. And that is not always the case because a lot of times the treatments involved are surgery, and those surgeries are performed by conventional dentists that may not have training in surgery, right? So they're helping the patient, they're trying to help the patient because there's nobody in the area that is recognizing or aware of these things. But if they don't have the skill sets or the techniques to do it, it can create a bigger issue as well.
Right. I mean, it's hard enough to find a medical practitioner that is familiar with Lyme, right? Let alone a dentist. Now we just added more to our plate. Thanks, Dr. Alex.
I know, but I want to always help patients get to the right place, and that's
Yes.
really, really important, because
Absolutely.
Lyme disease and chronic Lyme disease specifically, patients go a long time in circles or in loops, bouncing around between practitioners, trying to find that. In fact, even prior to being on this call, I was on a virtual consultation with a patient from Colorado, and I'm located in New York City, and between me and that, between New York City and Colorado, there's probably thousands and thousands of dentists, but we're connecting because that specific need, to deal with that, and that individual actually has Lyme disease, dealing with that amongst a milieu of other health issues that have been misdiagnosed and mistreated, is unfortunately a very common part of the journey, not only that we see in the medicine side, but we also see that on the dentistry side as well. And so I think making sure that we're seeing vetted providers, and there are groups that are trying to help identify that for people, like, where can you go to deal with these things? And that's an important evolution in our world right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. And so, with you being all the way in New York City, may not be feasible for a lot of people to come to you. So, if I could just ask you the top three questions, maybe, that if anybody's listening to this and is needing to find a biological dentist, what would be your top three questions that we should ask or kind of try to vet our doctor or vet our dentist?
I think first and foremost is asking them, can you explain to me or show me what credentials you have in biologic dentistry, right? It should not be just self-proclaimed or that that they saw a seminar or webinar, but that they actually did the training that is now kind of associated with that, which would be really important. The second question I'd say is asking them specifically about, Lyme disease patients that they've treated, and maybe even asking if you could speak to some of these patients or see if there's any testimonials that speak to it, because that journey is really, really important to kind of hear that, and making sure that they have experience treating this, I think is really a big deal. And then the last component, I would say, in terms of proper treatment of the condition, who are some of the functional medicine doctors that they work with, and can they get a recommendation, to speak with them, to know that the proper treatment of Lyme disease is a team effort. It's not just the dentist alone, it's not just the functional medicine doctor alone. And I think that that's a really important third part, which is to ask, okay, who are you working with to help the body detox the process, even when we are treating the sources in the mouth? right? And vice versa, you know? I would say probably the most important question, right? Who are the team of people around you that are helping you
Yes.
go through this process and this journey?
Save the best for last, right? No, I think that and I don't think I would have thought of that. So that I think that that's super important, right? Because we don't just want to, unfortunately, in this world, especially within this community, we can't take things at face value. Like we can't. We really need to do our own due diligence, do our own research. And I think that that would be a fabulous question to ask. And I'm assuming that somebody comes to you and asks that. You have no problem sharing these names of the people that you work with, and I think that that shows a lot of credibility. So that's
Yeah, and we build a network, right? You know,
right.
to manage the dental component of this is finite, right? The medical component of this can be much more extensive. And so we have functional medicine doctors that we work with in New York City, and we manage the care of local patients, but we also have Lyme literate doctors all over the country, from out in Seattle area to California to Florida, all throughout the country, and we work in partnership. And a patient may come up, but we will address with the oral source of the disease to eliminate that burden from the body, right? So that their doctors locally can take them through the rest of the treatment course with success. Right. And so that's one of the ways that this process works for patients, you know, to kind of help deal with and treat some of these issues. And it works very, very well. So to me, it's not that you just have to work with a basis of people in New York or in my community, but you know, it's really about
It's a
connecting
team
a
effort.
yeah, like a it should be a global community. It really should be a global community.
I completely agree. And so hopefully this podcast is going to reach all the ears that it needs to, right? And just
Yeah.
really educate these people. And because I think already so far you've shared so much amazing information. So I never like to assume, but would it be safe to assume that biological dentists do not take insurance?
It can vary. It can vary. I
Okay.
would say, you know, for the most part, they don't take insurance. But, you know, I'll give you my quick 1 minute soapbox about dental
Okay.
insurance. You know, dental insurance is very different from medical insurance, even though it's a misnomer, right? So what happens is medical insurance, there's a certain basis that you need to pay, and then you have a covered service kind of going on indefinitely. God forbid something major is going on. There's the deductibles you have to pay, and then they're covering the big part of the bill. Unfortunately, dental insurance is really just a benefit. Right, you'll get a coupon for $2,000 or $3,000 of coverage per year, and in fact, that amount has not really grown much since the 60s or 70s. Right, and as we know, the cost of everything has grown tremendously since the 60s or 70s. So, you know,
It's grown tremendously in the last 2 years.
exactly, and so dental insurance doesn't keep up with that. It's a great tool to use for basic services, diagnostics, maintenance care, you know, kind of cleaning checkups, that kind of stuff, right? But unfortunately, if there's kind of more major things out there, it really is not a great tool to use. And it creates a certain business model within the dental world where if a practice relies on insurance reimbursements, they need to cut costs elsewhere, whether that's in the quality of the doctors that they employ in their practice, or the materials that they use, or the technology that they offer, right? Because it doesn't work to cover the differential or be able to offer the patients really high level materials. And again, going back to the idea of non-toxic materials that
Right.
are
The stuff that we don't want
biocompatible.
to cut
Right.
out.
Right. And so that's where some of those challenges come across. So, you know, every biologic dentist, well, I should say, I know for us, I could speak for us. We will accept that insurance as a reimbursed benefit for the patient. It's not lost, right? So
Okay.
that benefit, that $2,000, that $3,000, we will always strive to get that reimbursed to the patients through the practice. So that it's not that you don't get to use this benefit, you
Okay.
maximize the benefit. But will also tell you, like, look, this is what it won't cover, right? This
Right.
is not part of the benefits that you'll have as part of the picture there. And so, most of the time we say biologic dentistry, it's not a insurance-based practice where insurance doesn't cover it because, they're not going to recognize some of those nuances of treatment. For example, like using ozone therapy, that's not something that an insurance company is gonna
What's
recommend.
ozone?
Right, exactly. So
Yeah,
there's certain
okay.
conventional concepts, and that's what they work with.
Right. So just for like imaging and teeth cleaning and things like that, we can probably go to a biological dentist, right? Because we're wanting them to pick up on maybe signs of, from our mouth that are telling them other things that a regular dentist wouldn't do. And it sounds to me like possibly insurance could reimburse some of those basic things when we're
Yeah.
talking about cleanings and imaging and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, diagnostics are a great place to utilize insurance benefits. Preventive maintenance care, like cleanings, is a great place to utilize insurance benefits as well. And kind of depending on what you need, there may be some things that are covered a little bit better than others. Like for example, like a dental filling. That might be covered well. But sometimes insurance companies will say things like, we are only going to cover a mercury amalgam filling for you. You
Right.
have to pay the differential. I mean, to me, that's crazy, right? That's crazy to say that, okay, hey,
But our health
this
care
is
is
what we
not
do.
out to cure us, right? They're out
Right.
to make us sick, keep us
Yeah.
sick.
Yeah.
Sorry, couldn't help myself.
No, well, you're absolutely right. And look, in this country, insurance companies are a for-profit organization, right? So, it doesn't pay to get people healthy, right? You got to
Right.
get them better to the point that they still need those services.
Right. But it is great to know that some of the basics, some of, like you just mentioned, can be covered so that we can comfortably feel that we can go to a biological dentist, especially when we're dealing with Lyme or any type of chronic illness, right? Or we know we're going through a lot of inflammation because you can kind of be our second set of eyes to a practitioner on what might be going on in our overall body.
Yeah.
So, all
And
right,
there's a
well,
lot of
let's.
ways to, I would just kind of add, there's a lot of ways to also help with the cost component of any treatment involved as well. And one of the big aspects of this is kind of managing things over time or sequencing things over time. There's a lot of companies that also help with healthcare financing that can be very favorable, even with non-interest bearing terms, to help with the process. So, in our office, we have dedicated treatment coordinators that help patients through the process to not only find out, okay, hey, here's what we need to do, but also, how do we make this affordable? How do we make this
Right.
work, for you? And we treat patients all over the spectrum in terms of income levels, because health should not be siloed to just one group of people that can afford it. All right. It's something that we should invest in early so that you can maintain this over your lifespan. And I think the real patients that benefit tremendously from biologic dentistry are the patients who get aware of it and involved with it early and focus on the preventative basis, the preventative strategies that biologic dentistry offers to avoid the extensive and expensive world that dentistry can be when we're fixing conventional dental problems and dealing with extensive infection that comes with that.
Perfect. Okay. Well, that right there is going to lead me into my first question. So, talk about kind of being preventative, right? Like starting this as an early journey. Can we talk about toothpaste and
Yeah.
fluoride? Is fluoride a big no-no, right? Is it okay? Is there some things? What do you consider the healthiest form of keeping our teeth clean as far as toothpaste goes?
Yeah. Well, I'll preface it to say that, interestingly, there's been research and studies that have shown that you don't need any toothpaste to maintain a healthy mouth, right? Just the physical act of brushing your teeth disrupts the microbiome, the plaque-forming microbiome that causes decay and gum disease. And that is effective enough at maintaining health. So I always kind of love because people want to know, hey, what's the best product I can use, or what's the best thing I can use? But just the fact that you find something that you will create a good habit with and truly brush twice a day for 2 minutes a day, that is the majority of the recipe for success. Then to me, I think of toothpaste as a prescription. What is it that I'm trying to achieve with that process? So fluoride, for example, fluoride is something that can be added to toothpaste that has a benefit that it makes teeth more mineralized or harder, which makes it tougher for them to get decay. And that's a benefit, but it also comes at a compromise. It makes the teeth themselves more brittle. And it also has systemic effects, especially if young children are utilizing fluoridated toothpaste and they
And swallowing
swallow
the
this,
majority of
get close to it.
it.
Yeah. You know, I have a 2-year-old daughter. I wash her, brush her teeth. By the way, we don't use fluoridated toothpaste with her, for anyone who's asking, but I wash her, brush her teeth, and she loves the taste of the water on the toothbrush and the toothpaste, and she just sucks it right off. And I'm like, wow, thank God I know what I know, right? Because otherwise she'd be ingesting a ton of fluoride. And for a developing baby, for a growing body, that fluoride deposits in the bones, right? It deposits in the skeletal structures. It deposits in the pituitary gland, right? So there is a lot of systemic effect that can have, because fluoride is a very active ion, all right? And same way that it works in teeth, by knocking out hydroxyapatite and replacing it with fluoride in the teeth, it's doing the same thing in the bones, because our bones are also made out of hydroxyapatite. And so, yes, they're harder, but they're more brittle, right? And that's not always necessarily healthier. So there's some good alternatives. There's some really good alternatives. So when we think about fluoride-free toothpaste, I'll kind of say that there are several products out there that now utilize hydroxyapatite. So hydroxyapatite is the same tooth structure that our teeth are made out of. And in a micro or nano formulation, they can help with remineralization. So patients who have risk of dental decay, cavities, children, I think that this is a great product to use. All right, because you couple it with teaching good brushing habits to disrupt the microbiome, and then you expose the teeth to hydroxyapatite to help with remineralization. Because our diet tends to be more acidic, right? So that will demineralize the teeth. All right. Having hydroxyapatite or more basic structure, like even why drinking milk is good, right? It is basic. It elevates the pH and helps with the natural remineralization process.
Okay. And that was one of my other questions was, are these toothpaste that say they're that word that I
Yeah,
can't say?
remineralizing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are they worth it? So it sounds like there are some good ones out there that really can remineralize our teeth. Why can't I say that
Yes,
word?
yeah, there is. Yeah, and that's, the science shows that, right? So, the studies will show that they will remineralize the teeth faster, and that there's going to be a greater impact or benefit on caries control or dental decay, decreasing dental decay rate when we utilize these products. But again, and I like to share the dirty little secrets on these things, because I think it's what patients really need to know, right? It's actually, at the end of the day, it's really the actual act of brushing, right, that's disrupting the microbiome that will kind of go the distance, and also proper nutrition, right? Any remineralizing toothpaste, whether it has hydroxyapatite in it or fluoride in it, whatever, right? In a diet that is high in sugar, that is high in acid, is still not going to do it, right? Those patients are still going to succumb to dental cavities and have issues with their teeth. So if you really want to make a lasting impact, it's not the product that you're using. Right. It's the habit forming of properly cleaning the teeth and the gum line and looking at your nutrition, right? Looking at your diet and cleaning that up.
Okay. Who would have thought, right? We truly are what we eat, even our mouth.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So then, what can we talk about, if anything, about coconut oil pooling? That's one of the things I love to do. Is there really a benefit? Do we need to do it?
So one of the other areas that we think of the microbiome in the mouth as having an effect is not just on decay for teeth, but it's also on gum health, right? So periodontal disease or periodontal inflammation, gum disease, is a really common occurrence. About one in two adults has some level of gum disease or gum inflammation going on in their mouth. And so if we could find some ways to help mitigate that, right, and have a healthier microbiome and have less gum inflammation, well, that's going to lead to a lot of downstream health benefits. Everything from less bleeding in the gums and a healthier mouth to even all those systemic health issues that we talked about, like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and even Lyme. We'll talk about that probably a little bit later here too. Coconut oil pulling is a great way to help maintain a healthier flora in the mouth, right? Because the coconut oil pulling is going to help you kind of clean. The physical act of irrigating and lavaging and flushing out the gum line is going to be really, really efficacious. What it will not do is, if you have active gum disease, it will not treat it, right? So if you have gum pockets, gum infections, and you say, okay, I'm going to treat this by coconut oil pulling, this is going to get rid of it, that's not the case. And I'm happy that I'm here to be able to kind of share that message, because I think it's really important to know what these treatments can do and they can't do. A remineralizing toothpaste is not going to fix a cavity that's already formed. All right. If that's happened, we need to see a biologic dentist. We got to get that addressed. All right. If there's active gum disease or periodontal disease, coconut oil pulling is not going to treat that. But
Okay.
both are great preventative strategies to prevent that disease from happening in the first place.
Right. And so much is prevention, right? And that's interesting that you say, and I probably couldn't think of one if I needed to, but there's a lot of information out online, right? Google is not always our best friend, but there's all these magic cures to get rid of a cavity and do all these things. And so what I'm hearing you saying is that probably not true.
Well, it's a little bit like, today we see these stories of these AI videos that aren't real,
Right.
right? But they
Okay.
look real. Well, before that, it was, the Google article, the text that would say, oh, well, you do this and it's going to cure it. And that's, that you got to be able to decipher, what's real from what's not real. And again, this goes back to having a really good team, right? If you ask these questions to your biologic dentist, if you ask these questions to your functional medicine doctors, you're gonna get the truth. You're gonna know what really works and what doesn't work, and you're gonna see a common trend, a common pattern. You'll see that the functional medicine doctors and the biologic dentists will constantly talk about nutrition. They're going to constantly talk about your exercise levels, your health levels, right? Because these are the ways that our body kind of charges and excretes and works through all these issues. All right. And we're always going to talk about utilizing clean products, and we're going to be talking about finding ways to help optimize your body's self-repair process. All right.
Yes.
So things that make sense like that work. Things that sound a little bit like a miracle cure or like a wonder drug, unfortunately, a lot of times they're kind of snake oil.
Yeah. And you hear it in the Lyme community too. Oh, you do this one thing and it'll cure your Lyme. And I always say, run as fast as you can, because it's just not that simple. And it's not, right? And it doesn't sound like it is in our mouth either. So all right, so a couple of the big topics that go around in this community is root canals and cavitations. So if we can kind of talk about root canals, right? So we might want to avoid them. I don't know. You're the dentist. I'm going to let you talk about that. But so not only should we choose to do a root canal, not do a root canal, and also, what about if we already have root canals? Like, what are the things that we should look for to see if it's an issue for us?
Well, I'm gonna kind of start with the context of prevention, right? I think we've talked a lot about different strategies and different things that can be done, to prevent, dental decay or to mitigate that process. And I think it kind of starts there because I want you to know that a root canal is a very late stage process in terms of the health of the tooth. All right. In order for a tooth to need a root canal, it means that bacteria has to have transmitted itself from the outer part of the tooth, from the enamel, into the inner structure of the tooth, which we call the dentin, which is the secondary shield of the pulp, and then now infected and contaminated that in internal blood supply and nerve structure. Right. So, in order for decay to progress that far, it means that it either has to be missed for quite a while, all right, or there are certain things that are predicating that patient to a very aggressive level of decay that it's really important to, catch that as, as soon as possible. So preventing root canals is the best way to avoid them and to treat them. But sometimes it happens that a patient is facing with that situation. Maybe a tooth breaks. We just had the Olympic Games, and we saw Team USA won the gold medal, and their star player scored the goals. Also in the same game, shattered his front tooth down to the pulp, right? So that tooth now has an exposed nerve, and that can happen. That could be a child playing on a playground. And has an accident that can happen. And so, as a biologic dentist, I want to explain, that there are certain times, and this is an important statement because I want to go out there in a very confident way to say that it's not that there's one, like all root canals are bad and that there's no place for it, but you need to understand when it's the right time to advocate for it and when it's not the right time to advocate for it. And so, in that situation, when you have, let's say, a young child who had a fall or an early injury in life. If you don't save that tooth, the physical tooth, it's going to affect the jaw development and the skeletal development for that patient. All right. If that tooth gets pulled out, that bone won't develop properly. And it's not to say that we can't recreate that later, but that can create a significant issue. All right. That can create airway issues, breathing issues for patients. That can create bite or occlusion issues. So, in some instances, it's the best choice for that scenario. Sometimes a patient may be on certain medications or have certain health risks. For example, like heavy duty bisphosphonate treatments are a common thing I see in surgical patients. Bisphosphonates are drugs that are used for bone density treatment. Right, patients who have very, very low d bone density and are at risk of falling may be put on these medications because there's a correlation between breaking your hip and the end of your life. All right, and so patients are put on these medications to prevent that, but there can be a risk now to remove that tooth. Right, removing that tooth can now create a condition where there can be a necrosis or a death of the jawbone around that site. And that's a side effect of that medication, right? So in those instances, maybe a root canal, again, is an appropriate way to do it. But I think it comes to the idea, to distill it to one concept, is that in certain cases, it can be a good transitional choice, right? It may mean that across all the options we're facing for the patient, this might be the least invasive or the most appropriate thing to do, at least for the short to medium term. Okay. But in general, if we can avoid it or prevent it, that's the goal. And if we have another alternative, if the patient is healthy enough to receive a dental implant, all right, that might be the better alternative for that patient too. Patients who have high decay rates, patients with gum disease and periodontal disease risk, patients who've seen failure with other root canals, and patients with autoimmune and chronic illnesses such as Lyme disease will tend to do better with removal of an infected tooth. They will tend to do better with the removal of an infected root canal tooth. And that's an important distinction, right? Because not all patients are the same. And so a generic question like, are root canals bad or should everyone get their root canals out? Well, no one is everyone. We're all individuals. And we need to think of it
It,
that
you
way.
know, and in the medical community, right? Like, we know all of our bodies are so different. Like, what works for one person isn't going to work for another. But listen to me, I just said trying to generalize it. We can't even generalize our mouth because that is how connected it is to our body, right?
Exactly.
Incredible, incredible.
Yeah, and I speak to that for the nuance because I think that
Yeah,
what I
no,
see in a
I'm
lot of
so glad that you
biologic
did.
dentistry, there's a lot of fear-mongering that happens in biologic dentistry too, that they say your root canal is causing cancer. Your root canal is causing your Lyme disease. That's not true. There's no study that supports that. So causation is a very high level of science that we need to achieve in order to be able to kind of say that, right? But what we do see is we see a lot of correlation, right? And we see that patients who have inflammation in the mouth seem to have a greater inflammation in the body. And so if we can avoid doing root canals, all right, or make it a treatment recommendation for a patient where we say, look, that's not the right way for you to go. Right now, you're starting to think like a biologic dentist. You're starting to see the mouth as part of the body and making a recommendation for the patient that, hey, there is a better alternative here. Right. Because in dentistry, we want to try to save the tooth at all costs.
Right.
And that's why that recommendation comes out a lot in the conventional world. But we need to think bigger than the mouth. Right. What is that person dealing with? Right. And I will say to you, and probably a lot of your listeners are patients who have Lyme disease or Lyme-related chronic illnesses or symptoms. This is a subset of patients that should really think twice about getting a root canal. If they have existing root canals, they should be checked with a 3D scan to see if they're breaking down. Are there signs of infection there? And it's very important for them to treat it early. Don't wait for that root canal to become a big infection to spread to the sinus or to perforate the jawbone and start to see swelling in the gum or in the cheek area. That's way too late in a vulnerable subset of patients, right? Because that
Right.
is exactly what Lyme pathogens are looking for. They're looking for a weakened immune system to take advantage
Yeah.
of and wreak havoc on the body. Don't let
So when
that
you
happen.
talk about the 3D, is that that cone?
On beam,
Yeah,
yeah.
the cone beam. Okay, so that is what's going to be able to check for an infection. So if you have an existing root canal, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's causing you an issue, right? It certainly can be. Like, so for example, during my journey, one of my teeth cracked in the middle of my journey, and I had a root canal because I didn't want to lose a tooth. Who does? Like you said, right? And I don't believe it's ever caused me any issues, right? But it was always when I was going through my healing journey, it was always in my mind. Okay, is this just a really, really long journey, or is it this root canal that everybody keeps talking about, right? So these cone beam scans can check for that.
Exactly,
So
yeah. And
if you
that's
have, if they find something that is causing you an issue within this root canal that had been previously done, are there ways to mitigate it other than just pulling it?
yeah, so a cone beam scan is a 3D X-ray, right? Most dental offices diagnose off of a two-dimensional image. Which in today's world to me is a little bit crazy, but it still is the standard of care, right? So if your dentist is taking a two-dimensional picture of your tooth and you have a root canal and they say, oh, look, everything looks fine, you have to get a 3D image, all right? Because I will tell you time and time again, I find missed infections on that look completely normal on 2D. It's not that the doctor missed the diagnosis, just didn't see it. It wasn't in the picture. But in
So,
3D, you can see something different.
Okay, so on a 2D, or let me ask it this way. They used to put the old school films in your mouth, right? Like nowadays, a lot of dentists utilize, kind of this Wi-Fi stuff or whatever. So if they are sticking anything in your mouth to get a picture, is that 100% not 3D?
Yeah, that's 2D. That's going to be a
Okay,
2D.
no matter what apparatus
Correct.
they put in your mouth, that is not going to be a 3D picture.
Correct. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Because sometimes we need to advocate for ourselves. So if we have a dentist, oh yeah, this is a 3D and they're sticking it in our mouth, we need to know that no, you're wrong.
A 3D, it's a specialized machine, okay? The harder thing to distinguish is between a panoramic X-ray, which is a flat 2D image of the whole jaw, or a 3D CBCT image, right? But the way to know is ask your dentist to then show you the image, right? And what a 3D image is always able to do is to take all that data with the help of a computer, rebuild and create a 3D image that can be moved, rotated, looked at in different views. All right. Because it's a little bit like if you take a loaf of bread, all right, and you see the outside, all right, and it's the crispy, toasty outer part. But when you cut in the middle, it can have a totally different color inside, right? Let's say it's a piece of white bread, right? The inside is white, the outside is brown. What you're looking for is that inner layer. You're looking to see what is happening in the inside of the bone. What's happening at the inside of the tooth? And that's the power of the 3D image. It allows us to look at it on a very fine-tuned scale and see what's going on. So they have to be able to show you that. And then when it comes to, let's say, root canal teeth are going to have a white, very bright white filling material that's intentionally added to the root canal material so that it shows up on an X-ray. All right. So the filling material is called guttapercha, and it usually has some kind of opacifier or something that makes it look bright white on an X-ray. Sometimes contains barium, which is, a filler that can also create some issue for patients. When you see it on the 3D scan, what we are looking for, what a root canal is, it's like a seal, right? It's like a seal inside the canal to prevent leakage of bacteria and endotoxin or toxins of the bacteria to come out through the apex of the tooth. If there is a shadow, a dark space at the end of the root, that is indicative of an infection. And some endodontists may argue, well, that could be scar tissue. What we know is that bone does not heal with scar tissue. Bone either heals with bone or with inflammatory tissue. And if it does not fully heal, it means that something is preventing that. All right. And that's very important to look at that and have that properly diagnosed and treated. If a tooth has that, if there's some type of shadow at the apex of the tooth, there's two options at that point. You could either choose to retreat the root canal, meaning try a second time to go through that space, or sometimes an endodontist will choose to amputate or cut off the end of the root if they think it's just some problem with just the very tip, or removing the tooth. What the literature shows, or the research has showed, the true science shows, is the success rates of retreatments are far less than the success of the initial treatment. So it's not a one-to-one replacement.
Good
So if
to
it didn't
know.
get done right the first time, it's very unlikely it's going to get done better the second time. All right. And you're going to
That's
have to
good to
go through
know.
that whole procedure again. And that to me is one of the places where I say, look, if you have a root canal and it's showing sign of infection, you're better off getting that removed and placed with an implant because that has better long-term success.
Perfect. All right. Now one of the other big topics is mercury, right? Like a lot of us, Lyme doesn't travel alone. So a lot of times we have metal toxicity poisoning. And one of the top ones that I hear about is mercury. And I believe that that is one way that you can get it is from having mercury fillings. So I think a lot of dentists nowadays, just regular dentists, are they kind of getting away from mercury? I feel like they are.
Thank God. Thank
Are
God.
they?
Yes.
Okay, thank God.
Yes.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Although
So.
I was in an office recently and I saw the mercury, I forget what the machine is called. This tells you how long it's been that I've kind of been exposed to this stuff. But it essentially, in order to place mercury filling, you first got to put this capsule in this little machine that vibrates it to mix the mercury with all the other
And you
mineral
saw that
atoms. And
machine.
I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe it. It's office.
Yeah.
Not granted
So,
to say not a biologic dental office, but
for sure
you
not,
know,
right?
but
Or I don't know. He could be portraying himself as one, right? That's one thing to look for.
it does, yeah. But I'd say there's fortunately there's a very, very good consensus and awareness that this is really not the right material to place for patients.
Okay. So how important is it, especially, since we are talking about Lyme disease or all the co-infections, things that go with it, how important is it for somebody to prioritize taking out mercury from their fillings when they're going through this journey? And or is there a way to know if that should be a priority, right? I'm assuming maybe some metal testing, right, to see if they've been, if they have high levels of mercury, which for myself I did. And so that was what, led me down the path of having them removed because I know that people get nervous. I just think a person in general, you're going to take out the filling and put in a different one. It sounds like a lot of work that doesn't need to be done, right? That we got to sit through and pay for and all of that. So can you talk about the importance of it?
Of course, yeah. I think this is such an important topic to discuss because first and foremost, I think what you said about kind of doing the mercury testing to see if levels are high in the body and in the blood is a really good way to understand, how significant of an issue it is. And if that is the case, then how you treat it is also a really important part of the conversation. On the dental side, there's something we look for as well, and we look for something called corrosion. Right. So this is a metal filling. So metal, right, in a warm, wet environment will start to corrode. A filling, an amalgam filling, when it's first placed, tends to be very shiny, very, very clean, and the margins are all sealed to the tooth. But over time, all those, you eat something cold, you drink something hot, this warm, wet environment, this expansion, contraction that happens starts to weather the filling. And the metal starts to break down. All right. And when that happens, all that chewing force, all that biting force, you're constantly releasing little bits of mercury into the body. All right. And in this process, as it's happening, as it's starting to corrode, it starts to amplify. You start to see more and more and more of that release. And sometimes even chunks of the filling may fall out and patients swallow it. We see missing pieces of amalgam all the time. And that's a major exposure of mercury to the body. So what do we do if we see that? So if we see high mercury levels in the blood or we see corroding or breaking down fillings, mercury fillings, there's a protocol to properly remove it. We don't want to just drill into the filling like a conventional dental filling removal, because what will happen is the process when you take a burr to that mercury filling, you release a significant amount of vapor, of mercury vapor into the air. That's mercury vapor that the patient is swallowing and breathing,
Right.
and even toxic to the dentist in the room performing the procedure. So it's a very important procedure to properly protect the patient from using binders and activators to prepare the body to soak up any mercury, utilizing a special dam to seal the mouth and the throat from any of that mercury that's coming out, putting the patient on oxygen, an alternative source, so that they're only breathing through their nose and they're breathing pure air. Having ionizers in the room to capture any free mercury and high vacuum suctions to collect it. And also special techniques of how to properly cut through it so you minimize the amount of time you're using the burr. And in our practice, we call it chunking. We try to remove big pieces of it without drilling, right? Because usually this material doesn't bind in. So if you get a little instrument into it, you can actually flick it off. And that's the safest way to remove it. And what do we find underneath, right? Not only now are we getting rid of the mercury, but oftentimes we find decay. We find exposure points where there can be infection or other issues to the body that we would just not be able to deal with or see like we would if there was a conventional filling, like a composite or a ceramic filling in there. So there's usually a lot of damage to the teeth. There's cracks, there's wear that happened because of this metal filling inside the tooth. And so we need to kind of then treat all that. We need to seal the tooth back up to protect the nerve and then put a biocompatible filling material, whether that's a BisGMA free composite or a ceramic filling of sorts to rebuild the tooth.
Okay. All right. And you know, I think that there's no such thing as a silly question, right? It's just what we don't know. And I've heard a lot in the community, how do I know if I have a mercury filling? So they're always that color, right? There's
Yeah,
no
you'll
way to
see it
hide
either
the
a
color of a mercury filling.
exactly, yeah, black or silver. You open your mouth, take a look. If you see anything black or silver on the biting surface or the side of the teeth, that is a mercury filling that's in there.
Perfect. All right. Just always want to educate everybody, right? We don't know
Yeah.
what we don't know. So it sounds like removing these mercury fillings can be very important, but also you got to be very
Safely.
careful, kind of like
Got it.
mold, right?
Yes.
Like it's not, you just don't find mold and spray bleach and clean it all up, right? When you have it in your house, which is, you know, a lot of people with Lyme deal with mold as well. So thank you so much for breaking that topic down. Gosh, I have so many topics. I have so many more topics I want to talk about. One of the other ones I think is, what can you tell us about TMJ? Is that kind of part of the Lyme? And I think, you know, Lyme disease causes inflammation in our joints. Well, our jawbone is actually a joint as well, right? And so
Correct,
is there a
correct.
big correlation between the two?
Yeah, so in some patients you'll see that. So exactly right. So Lyme disease can affect a lot of the joint spaces and create inflammation in those spaces. And the TMJ is the temporomandibular joint. It's located right in front of your ear, and your lower jaw, your mandible, is connected actually with two joint spaces, one on the right side and one on the left side, that's connected to that to the skull base via the TMJ joint. And so sometimes patients with chronic Lyme disease issues will have a lot of different pain symptoms that can be arising from whether it's inflammation in that space or sometimes even the muscles around it, right, that are kind of coupled. And we'll start to see a lot of tension, a lot of issue in the structures around there that will then secondarily create TMJ issues. And so if you kind of think about all the things that, you know, patients with Lyme disease deal with and all the stresses that they deal with, there's clenching, there's grinding, there's overuse of this joint space. And so it sometimes may not even be that Lyme causes the TMJ issues or, you know, but we start to see this extensive correlation where it's one of the differentials that we are looking for, especially when we see a patient with Lyme disease. We want to check their jaw joints. Right, we want to check the muscles in the space. Is there good movement? Can you open wide without pain or discomfort? All right, can you open and close without locking, meaning that the jaw joint gets obstructed by the disc and you cannot open or you cannot close, and that the muscles are not tender to pain and palpation as you kind of feel around it, that everything is kind of within a normal range and a normal level of comfort.
All right. So if somebody is experiencing this, is there a fix for it other than just maybe trying to reduce the inflammation in your body?
Yeah, so reducing the inflammation of the body, if it's kind of coupled to that and getting the Lyme disease under control, can calm down the TMJ issues. Sometimes we got to go a step further and we may need to do certain muscular therapies that can be as simple as using warm compresses on the joint and doing a little stretching exercises, a little bit of physical therapy to just kind of regain functional movement. Think of it just like the knee, right? If there's an injury to the knee, all right, you can't just go out and play basketball right away, right? You're going to need to ice it, right? Let it heal, let it recover, get some stretches going. Anti-inflammatory medications or supplements can be very helpful as well to alleviate some of those issues.
Because it's a joint. So treat it the same way you treat
Exactly.
another joint in your body. Okay, makes sense. All right. So I had one of the listeners ask me this, and I wasn't even sure what it meant. So I'm excited to learn about this. Crowns, right? So a crown versus an overlay. What is an overlay? Never heard of such a thing.
Overlay or probably like an onlay is like a partial crown. So if a tooth has a big enough cavity, or more often, had an amalgam filling which has damaged a lot of the tooth surface, the patient's kind of facing two options, right? One option is to reduce the rest of the structure 360 degrees around the tooth and put a crown on it. Right, meaning that all that is left, the only enamel that's left of that tooth, is at the very, very base below where the crown is. Otherwise, everything has been shaved away or been removed, and that's a crown. An onlay is a structure that will preserve some parts of the enamel that are healthy or intact, and any part that's damaged, whether it's due to the filling, a crack, or a chip in the enamel, will be replaced with a partial ceramic restoration. So think of it like a
Okay.
three-quarter crown or a half crown for just the top surface of the tooth. And that's the difference between the two.
Okay, so now, you've mentioned, and we all know we want to do everything we can to preserve our teeth, right? So is there a benefit to that then? Because you want to keep some of the good enamel. So maybe an overlay is there any pros or cons to one or the other?
If it is possible to do an onlay, that's
Onlay,
always
not overlay, onlay. Okay, thank you.
That's always preferable. It means that there's more tooth structure there that does not need to be reduced, just to restore or save the tooth. It's
Okay.
not always possible, but when it is, it's definitely the better choice.
The way to go. Okay, perfect. All right. We could be on for hours. I'm certain of it because just in this conversation, I've had a lot more questions pop into my head, but I'm gonna leave you with this last question. So, oftentimes when we are dealing with Lyme disease and the co-infections and all the things that go along with it, it doesn't take much for our body to flare, right? Even a healthy person. Their body is going to get anxiety going into the dentist office because it's just not their favorite place to be, right? So, what have you seen with your patients, or maybe tips that you can share with us for those that are literally petrified to go to any type of a dentist, right? Because they're afraid of even having a cleaning, having a reaction, and their body's going to do some type of a flare. Is there any tips or advice that you can give us on that?
Well, I think it's really important to, find a dentist that you feel very comfortable to work with, someone that
Yes.
is going to kind of work with your condition and work with your timing. And, I think most patients with Lyme disease kind of realize that there's certain ebbs and flows in the disease process, right? And so there's certain opportunities or certain times where the body may be in better control or more optimized to treat something. And so I think it's really important to work with the patient and work with their functional medicine team to find what can we do to support the patient coming into that procedure. What can we do to kind of bring that body into more of a parasympathetic state, right? Can we try to relax some of that anxiety and some of that stress and concern that's going on? Now, if there's an acute issue, right, like a dental infection, an infected tooth, infected root canal, a cavitation, right? Sometimes we have to treat that in order to get the body out of that state, right? Out of that
Yes,
inflamed
100%.
inflammatory
Yeah.
state, right? And there are techniques, there are certain ways that we can do those procedures, whether it's through the utilization of sedation or acupuncture, or certain therapeutics that can really help the patients kind of relax or channel the body towards healing. I also think it's very important to support the patient and support their body before, during, and after treatment. So one of the things that we commonly use with patients is supportive IV drip therapies and supplementation nutrition recommendations prior to treatment, so that all the building blocks are there, that immune system is kind of ready to deal with the dental procedure. And any of those inflammatory processes that they're dealing with from Lyme or their other co-infections are in a more managed state. All right. And that's really important, because if a patient is very, what we'll say, brittle, like they're at the point right now where they're having flare-ups, and then we go and do surgery that, let's say, is not direly immediately necessary, that may just push the body even further over the edge. There may not be the reserves to deal with that.
What type of IVs are you talking about? Nutritional IVs or?
Yeah, exactly. So we can utilize certain supplements. So for example, certain vitamin therapies can help prepare the body for a proper healing, like high dose vitamin C therapy. Maybe a patient
One of my
needs to
favorite
detox.
things.
So our patients will put them on a protocol where they're getting vitamin C, essential minerals, they're getting amino acids before, during, and after their treatment to help their body prepare for recovery and know that any treatment that they do is going to deplete the body of those same nutrients and make sure that we can replenish that along the way. And that's a big part of that process for patients, to make sure that things are properly supported along the way.
I love it. Absolutely love it. This has been truly fascinating. And it really is just a reminder to the listeners out there, a couple of things. Always prevention is best. But I know I've been there. I mean, I used to have a post-it note on my bathroom mirror that said, brush your teeth, because I didn't know my name. How am I supposed to know I'm supposed to brush my teeth? So I know it can be challenging, and we do the best that we can do, and we've always got to give ourselves grace. But prevention is the best, right? But then also just be fully aware that if you're going through this journey and you're not seeing the needle move and your gut is telling you something else, it may be in your mouth. So it's important that we find a dentist, a biological dentist that can walk us through this process, because as you just heard Dr. Alex share, the huge correlation between oral health and our overall body health. And so just don't let that missing link go undiscovered. So, Dr. Alex Volshnik from Tetra Health Dentistry in New York City. If that's where you want to find him, as listeners always, we will put the website in the description of this episode. And Dr. Alex, truly just thank you. Like, I've been enlightened today. I'm sure you've educated the listeners, and this is just a very important topic. So, truly appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate what you do in this community. We need more awareness about Lyme, right? And more practitioners, whether it's in the medical field or the dental field, we need to come together as a village to be able to support one another, and so we can all get well. So, I truly appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I've said, here is the importance of kind of finding the right team of people to work with. It makes a huge difference, and it means you can get better faster. You can get back to feeling well, or back to more normal life in a sooner timeline. And I think that that's really, really important. And working with a community of people that support you, that, I really appreciate what you're doing with this group, and educating people about this. The mouth is such an important gateway that is so often overlooked. What I hope by creating this awareness is I hope that I empower patients to look at this sooner. I will say the average time that patients deal with Lyme before they end up finding a biologic dentist is usually 4 to 5 years, right? We need to cut that down. We need to cut that down. I want us to be part of the equation right away, all right? But that right now is going to be about listeners empowering themselves and empowering them in the journey to take a look at this, evaluate this stuff, because we find Lyme pathogens in the infected root canal teeth, in the cavitation sites, infected areas of jawbone. We see it associated with so many oral health conditions and exacerbated by so many oral health conditions, such as failing mercury fillings, periodontal disease issues, and these are all things that we as biologic dentists can help with. So it takes a village, and we want to be part of that community. And thank you so much for your time, for having me here. And I want to be a valuable resource. We see patients both in person and virtually. So wherever you are in the world, you know, we can help you, we can talk to you, and we can guide you with this process and understanding how important your oral health is to the overall picture here. So thank
Well,
you.
gosh, well, thank you for sharing that very vital piece that you can kind of help people telehealth because I just assumed you couldn't. So, see what happens when we assume. So, good to know. Listeners, as always, I will put all the information to reach out to Dr. Alex in the description of this episode. Thank you again so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.